is Joseph Leon Matthews against the Commonwealth. Ms. Downing and Ms. Quinn. Ms. Adelphio. Ms. Downing, you have 15 minutes to argue. Would you like to reserve any of that time for rebuttal?
Good morning, Your Honor. Yes, I would. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right, and we'll be glad to hear from you when you're ready.
May it please the Court? My name is Alexis Downing, and I am here on behalf of the appellant, Joseph Matthews. We are asking that this court dismiss and vacate his conviction for possession of a Schedule II residue substance. The issue that we are raising on appeal is whether Mr. Matthews was unlawfully detained because the government's actions were not reasonably related to the purpose of the stop.
All right, let me go in reverse order here and start from the back end. Let's assume we agree with every argument you make in your brief.
Yes, sir.
And determine that based on Rodriguez, which was just decided after the stop in this case, and after the trial in this case, too, I believe, that the officer's actions were unnecessarily extended the stop and violate the principles of Rodriguez. Given the fact of the timing of when Rodriguez occurred, why wouldn't Herring apply? And in other words, we don't apply the exclusionary rule to exclude evidence if the police officers have no way of knowing what the law is, do we?
I think that that's a correct proposition as stated by Your Honor. The case that the Commonwealth cites for that proposition is United States versus Davis. And in that case, it was, I want to say, Arizona v. Gant, which overruled New York versus Belton, Belton versus New York. And so in that case, there was a complete sort of change in the underlying case law where this is action that was lawful at the time that it occurred, but then subsequently had been deemed unlawful.
But how about our opinion in Ellis that says a de minimis delay of a few minutes to get a drug dog is perfectly acceptable? If we're going to assume a police officer in Virginia is going to know a case, wouldn't we assume that they would know that one? And that would suggest that Rodriguez did significantly change the law, at least as interpreted by this court.
Well, I would, discuss the facts of that case. My sort of position as a starting point is that Rodriguez did not change the status of the law, and I think the court's interpretation, as I see it, is consistent with that in Ellis v. Commonwealth. Certainly there is some discussion of a delay, but in fact there was no delay that actually took place. And I think one of the reasons that the court ruled the way it did is because it talked about the fact that these actions are happening simultaneously. So in Ellis, this is someone I want to say who was pulled over for a traffic violation. The officer starts the return through dispatch for the NCIC or the VSIN, whatever those acronyms are. And while he's waiting on that return, says, hey, wait a minute, don't I recognize this lady, and asks some other questions.
Because if we set aside the consent issue for a moment and just look at the question Judge Russell asked about Ellis, Ellis, it seems to me, was a similar situation. The traffic stop was over, and if I recall the facts of Ellis correctly, there was a short conversation to the effect of, whether anything illegal was going on. And long story short, the Ellis court held that the delay, even though the stop was clearly over with, the delay to investigate possible criminal activity was de minimis and therefore could not have been a Fourth Amendment violation. It seems to me Rodriguez says that is absolutely cannot be the law any longer. Any delay, de minimis or not, is prohibited under the Fourth Amendment, unless you have at least reasonable suspicion to continue a detention, correct?
Absolutely, but my recollection of Ellis is that the traffic stop was not over, so there was not, in fact, any actual delay. These things were happening contemporaneously. So he called in, I've got this person on the side of the road, can you run their information? While he's waiting to get a return back, he goes and asks her some questions. So I think that's why it's permissible under Ellis, because there was not, in fact, any delay, although the court used the word delay. I think what the court perhaps...
Then Judge Kelsey characterized it as a delay.
He says that it took 1 minute. But I think what the facts show is that it did not extend the time of the stop because they were going on at the same time. So these are essentially parallel tracks. So Rodriguez, I think, has reiterated that an intrusion is tolerated by the Fourth Amendment. Unrelated matters are tolerated by the Fourth Amendment, and that intrusion is permissible so long as it does not delay. So intrusion and delay are not synonymous with each other. You can have an intrusion that doesn't cause delay, and I think that's what the court had in Ellis. They had this intrusion by asking these questions unrelated to the stop, but it didn't actually extend the time that the stop took because he was still lawfully engaged in the purpose of the stop, which I think is very different from what happened here. This officer was not lawfully engaged in the purpose of the stop. He was asking questions unrelated. He was calling a drug dog before he actually engaged in the actions that were necessary to carry out and fulfill that traffic stop. So in Ellis, because they are actually doing the activities that he's required, he's attending to the purpose of the stop at the same time, and specifically, I mean, waiting on the return from dispatch while he's asking these questions. I don't think that there is any delay, although there is an intrusion. And so I think Rodriguez makes clear that intrusion is okay. Intrusion is okay as long as it doesn't result in a delay.
Let's talk about the consent issues for a moment. We have not one but two consents here. So why isn't at least one of them valid?
Well, my argument to the court, and I want to say that's on page 77 in the joint appendix, I would be happy to refer to it, was that at least one of the consents came during the time that he was unlawfully detained.
That doesn't necessarily invalid. I mean, the law has never been that every consent obtained while you're in custody is de facto involuntary. You look at the totality of the circumstance. Harris, I think, is the instructive case on this.
If you're legitimately in custody, I think that that's correct. I think if you're unlawfully detained, I think any consent that you provide is invalid at that point.
I know very clearly you said that at least one, that you said one of the consents. I assume Officer Masella, you would contend that Officer Masella's consent was done after the detention had been impermissibly elongated. Let's talk about the other consent. Let's talk about when Masello is in the car doing things, the consent with Zabrine.
I think I was talking about the consent with Zabrine that came first in time.
Okay.
So that occurred while the stop was impermissibly elongated. After Masello got out of the car,
Do we know that from this record? Because even if he goes and calls for the canine first, mm-hmm. that's not impermissibly extending the detention because he is entitled to go call dispatch first. And so whatever amount of time calling dispatch and Pennsylvania about the learner's permit, however long that takes, that's permissible, correct? That amount of time.
We respectfully would submit that it was unlawfully extended because of the order that he undertook of going on with these things.
But if it would have taken, if he had not done the canine call and had called to find out about whether he was valid in Virginia and Pennsylvania, and let's say that would have taken 3 minutes, then wouldn't it be that the permissible length of the stop is 3 minutes?
But we don't know it would have or would not have.
And so
certainly if he hadn't done that, and I apologize, I don't mean to interrupt the court.
No, it's fine. I'm working through this. But so if the stop is 3 minutes, if the consent to Zabrine occurs within 3 minutes of him getting back in the car and he could have detained him for 3 minutes to run everything, isn't that consent valid?
I don't think that the record clearly establishes exactly at what point the consent was given to Zabrine. I think Zabrine comes over at some point, and we know when that happens in the car, but we don't know at what point Matthews actually provided that consent to Zabrine. Perhaps it was very early on in the encounter.
If there's ambiguity, who suffers?
I know that we're required to defer to the findings of fact, and certainly it's the facts most favorable to the Commonwealth on appeal. But at this point, if the consent was given very early on, at the point if he had taken 2 minutes and actually called in the return, as opposed to, you know, talking to the supervisor, investigating that avenue, prior to contacting dispatch, you know, presumably the stop would have been over. The stop would have been over in the first, you know, 5 minutes if he hadn't engaged in this extraneous sort of investigation that's not related to the purpose of the stop.
If the consent from Zabrina was timely, it wasn't. It was obtained at a point where it wasn't because the stop had been impermissibly elongated. Is there any other problem with the consent?
I'm sorry. I want to make sure I understand your question. Can you repeat it?
Sure. The consent that Zabrine gets, if it's timely, in that it occurred in a time period which, without any impermissible conduct, wouldn't the stop would have taken that long anyway, is there any other problem with the consent?
I don't think you can parse it out that way, because I think what happened was that the stop was extended unlawfully. So, you know, if it hadn't been extended unlawfully and there had been a consent, well, then absolutely that would be valid.
Well,
but because it was unlawful and extended, the detention as a whole was unlawful. And the consent
the issue whether
that detention.
It seems to me, as to both consents, it's simply an issue of whether or not the consent was voluntary. Because clearly you can waive your Fourth Amendment rights if you want to. Even if you're in custody, you can waive your Fourth Amendment rights. However, the totality of the circumstances have to suggest that your consent's not being, you know, your will's not being overborne. That's the Harris case. So you look at the totality of the circumstances, things like the number of police officers there and what else is going on around there and all that kind of stuff. So it seems to me we have to apply that analysis independently to each of these consents. Would you agree so far?
I would, and I would concede that I don't believe that objection was raised in the trial court. I think the objection as to the consent was based on the unlawful detention.
Okay.
And so the argument is that extends to both.
So do I understand that only one consent was objected to?
Both of the consents are objected to.
Okay.
That one was during the period of the unlawful detention, and that one followed on the heels of the period of the unlawful detention, such as to be, I think I called it fruit of the poisonous tree, to also similarly not be valid.
But we don't know if he called for the canine while he was waiting for the VSIN results. Or
we do know
results about the Pennsylvania learner's permit.
We do know that he called for the canine before he called for the VSIN results. And I think that was the basis of the motion to suppress and the argument here on appeal, is that if he had done the reverse, called for the VSIN first, and then in his spare time he's got, you know, a few minutes while he's waiting on the return, and he says, hey, can you get a canine out here?
I think in context what happened was, and I'm looking at page 88 of the joint appendix, the officer testified, I think it was Mike Michello testified, that the request for a canine unit lasted for a very, very brief period. It didn't take a great deal of time and happened really almost contemporaneously with the officer's efforts to get information on the license. The trial court then from that concluded that the officer was entitled to a reasonable period to execute the traffic stop and that the process was not necessarily delayed. I'm not sure if that's a typo or what. Was not necessarily delayed. So I guess the question then becomes, the canine, it's, I think Judge Atlee's point is the request for the canine was more or less contemporaneously with the efforts to complete the inquiry into the license status. And the trial court either concluded that there was no delay at all as a result of all of this, which I'm not sure is factually correct given that he'd returned the paperwork and all to your client, or whether it wasn't delayed in any measurable way, or, you know, it was like at Ellis, a de minimis delay. What would you suggest? How would you suggest we interpret
I think it's
that?
Either contemporaneous or it's not. You know, the fact that it was almost contemporaneous or followed closely on the heels, the fact of the matter is that it was not. It did not happen at the same exact time. Mm-hmm. And I think the focus here, and by the trial court and perhaps by the attorney general, is on the length of this delay, and I don't think that that's the appropriate light that these facts should be viewed in. It's whether or not there was any delay that was caused, or any delay, and I don't even want to use the word delay, but any extension of the stop as a result of this officer's actions.
Well,
and so we know that there was at least a 3-minute extension of the stop.
Well, but if we... If he had called for the vehicle information, the license information first, called for the canine while waiting for it to come back, and it comes back, then there's no problem.
Yes, because there's no delay. So he is allowed to engage in unrelated inquiries so long as there's no delay. And so the fact that he did it first, as opposed to doing it second, means that he delayed actually engaging in the activities that are related to the purpose of the stop.
But it doesn't mean that the endpoint is delayed, does it?
I think it has to mean that the endpoint is delayed. You know, we know that it took 2 minutes to get that return, and it took him 3 minutes to actually call for the return. So instead of taking that 3 minutes to call for the supervisor and request the canine, if he had called for the VSIN right away, he would have, in theory, have gotten the same response within the 2 minutes and would not have had time to then call for the canine, because he would then be wrapping up his paperwork and finishing the traffic stop.
Well, I guess the time frame that we're concerned about, really, and whether how much time elapsed, I guess, is less material to what order things occurred in. But your client was issued a warning for the dangling object, and then his learner's permit and ID were given back to him by Officer Marcello. And at that point, Officer Marcello testified that he asked if there were any drugs or weapons in the car. And then he stated, if you're going to let us search, we're not going to bring the drug dog. So I guess the issue is, is the stop over when he returns the learner's permit and the ID, and what legal effect, if any, does the conversation, if you're going to let us search, we're not going to bring the drug dog, have? Is that where we're at here?
Well, I think he's still at that point implying that he has the ability to retain him. If you want to say the stop is over and then it becomes a consensual encounter, I don't think you can have a consensual encounter where someone is suggesting that they have the authority to force him to stay there further. And I think that was the argument that at least I was trying to elucidate in my brief, which is, you know, he can't go and say, here, you're free to go. I mean, he doesn't say the words, you're free to go.
Well, analytically.
But he gives back the license. He gives a warning, which should be the end of it, right?
Analytically, nobody's contesting that there's probable cause for the stop. So we've got the stop, and it's investigated, and there's probable cause for it. And then he's issued a warning. And under Rodriguez, the individual needs to be turned loose and be free to leave unless there's at least reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. That's what Rodriguez says. Now, Rodriguez wasn't the law at the time of the stop, but that's the law now.
Well, I think Rodriguez clarifies the law, which was the same, at least in our position.
You know, the Supreme Court did anything with Rodriguez except
civil. I think they reiterate what they've said in Johnson and in Caballos, which is that, you know, these unrelated inquiries are okay. I mean, I think this is the gist of the ruling. It's that these unrelated inquiries are okay as long as they don't extend the stop. And so, you know, here, as in each of those cases, they said, you know, Johnson, there's a trainee that's conducting paperwork of the driver while somebody's doing a pat-down of a passenger. So in that case, they said, this does not extend the stop. This is an unrelated inquiry, but it doesn't extend the stop because we've got a second person that's doing all of the things, you know, with this passenger while the trainee is handling the driver and doing the preparation. So the driver is not extended any longer than he or she would have originally been absent this other pat-down.
Hey, you answered my question. We've totally chewed up all your rebuttal time. I'm still going to give you 2 minutes in rebuttal.
I apologize, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Delfio.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. The purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter police misconduct. Law enforcement officers are entitled to rely on existing case law at the time that they conduct their activities. In this case, it was objectively reasonable for Officer Marcello to believe that he could engage in a de minimis delay in taking care of non-traffic related issues during the course of the traffic stop.
Do you concede the stop was impermissibly delayed under Rodriguez?
I think that is true, Your Honor. However, Rodriguez was not the law at the time, and pursuant to Davis and Herring, we know that changes in the law do not retroactively apply to police conduct that occurred prior to significant law changes.
Well, your opponent, of course, argues that Rodriguez didn't change anything. It was already the law.
Well,
and how do you respond to that?
I think that Rodriguez itself recognizes that there was a split in the jurisdictions that regarding whether or not a de minimis delay was acceptable under the Fourth Amendment. Ellis, in fact, cites both the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th circuits in holding that a de minimis delay is, in fact, permissible during the completion of a traffic stop. So I would suggest that Rodriguez did, in fact, illuminate what exactly the definition of a measurable delay is or a reasonable delay. In Rodriguez, the court held that Justice Ginsburg specifically held that if an officer could effectuate a stop quickly, then that effectuating the stop quickly is, in fact, the reasonable amount of time that it would take to conduct the stop. However, that is not what the law was prior to the decision in Rodriguez. Virginia, this court, as well as the Fourth Circuit, and the other court cited in the Ellis opinion, found that de minimis delays, in some cases 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, where unrelated matters were pursued, did not constitute an unreasonable seizure. And in this case, Officer Mitello was entitled to rely on this understanding of Ellis, that de minimis delays do not transform lawful stops into unlawful seizures.
Does the record establish that the consent obtained by officers of Green occurred during an impermissible delay in the stop?
Your Honor, I would suggest that the record does not show precisely how long was spent on matters unrelated to the traffic stop, nor does the record reflect exactly when Officer Zabrine obtained the consent. We know that Officer Zabrine told Officer Mitello that he had consent about 14 minutes after the stop was initiated, but we don't know exactly when he did obtain that consent. It's not exactly clear from his testimony exactly when the consent was given. And any holes in the record do not grant a defendant a windfall. The defendant is stuck with the record that exists. And so if this court is not able to determine exactly or whether the consent to Officer Zabrine, which I would note is the important consent given in this case, was given, then you cannot
find... Well, it looks like the trial court seemed to ignore that so-called first consent altogether, if you want to call it a consent. The court said, I find that while there are elements in this particular case that raise questions, et cetera, the amount of the delay is so de minimis, I don't think it really rises to the point where the court can find there is a sufficient lack of diligence in pursuing this investigation, such that I find in any way attenuating the consent, nor do I find there is an unnecessary delay because consent was given. So it seems to me, in context, the trial court was simply looking at the statement, you know, of Officer Mitello concerning the, you know, if you'll consent to the search, we won't call, you know, we'll call off the drug dog, or we won't call the canine dog, or whatever words he used to that effect, and that because that was measured in just a matter of seconds or minutes, it was a de minimis delay that wouldn't obviate the consent. Would that be a fair reading of the trial court's ruling there?
Your Honor, I just want to be sure that statement was made at that the statement that you just read does not...
It's on 93 of the Joint Appendix, if that helps you.
Well, it does not mention Officer Mitello's name.
So that's true.
Not clear what consent the court was referring to in particular to that statement.
I guess I drew the conclusion, and maybe it's not a fair conclusion to draw, that because the court was referring to the delay, that it reflected the conversation that Mitello was having, because at that point he'd already returned the documents and was discussing the matter of consent with the individual. So I guess I just concluded that because the court was referring to the de minimis delay in the same context as the consent, that's what it was referring to.
Well, if I recall correctly, I think the defendant had also argued at that time that you don't know exactly when the dispatch would have returned a response. And so you didn't, at one point, so it was not clear, I'm sorry, court's indulgence. So at page 75 of the appendix, the defendant argues, after 5 minutes, had he gotten in the car and immediately radioed into dispatch to determine that the license was valid, who knows whether or not consent ultimately would have been given. He would have been permitted to proceed, in theory, on his way after a two-minute delay, at which time he learned that the Pennsylvania driver's license was valid. And I think that you can read into that that any sort of delay that occurs as a result of the delay in calling dispatch is was impermissible. And I think that that would include any time spent. If Officer Zabrine did not have the opportunity to talk to the defendant, then I'm sorry, I'm not articulating this well. I don't think that the court limited its finding necessarily to only the consent obtained by Officer Michello. And if it did, I would suggest to the court that there's ample evidence in the record that consent was already given to Officer Zabrine, and so the consent given to Officer Michello is irrelevant, and this court can affirm the denial of the motion to suppress based on any reason it finds in the record that's appropriately developed.
Okay.
I'd also point out that the trial court had the opportunity to view the videotape of the stop, and it determined that the delay was de minimis, and this finding is entitled to deference since it actually watched everything play out. Unfortunately, that videotape was not admitted as an exhibit during the lower court proceedings, so it's not available to this court. But that the court's finding that the delay was a de minimis delay is entitled to deference.
Well, it seems to me the Commonwealth only prevails under one of two theories here. Either it's a valid consent, in which case we got no Fourth Amendment implications at all. They're all waived. Or it's not a valid consent, and the first consent is a valid consent, or the second consent's not valid, but the Commonwealth prevails anyway because the exclusionary rule shouldn't apply.
I think the Commonwealth prevails under both theories, Your Honor.
I know, that's my point. Those are the only two theories under which the Commonwealth prevails here, it seems to me, though.
I think that in this case the exclusionary rule...
The reason
I bring it up is because you keep saying that the trial court's conclusion that there was de minimis delays entitled to deference, and under Rodriguez, I think my response would be, so what? It's not. Under Rodriguez, de minimis delays are no good. I mean, delay at all is what Rodriguez commands.
Rodriguez does not apply in the instant case, however, because it was not the law at the time of the stop.
Right. It strikes me you're focusing on the de minimis delay because if we reject the consent issue, you're saying the trial court found that he acted consistent with Ellis.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I did not mean to belabor the point. And because Officer Michello acted with a objectively reasonable good faith belief that his conduct was lawful under Ellis, the exclusionary rule should not apply. I would just note that below there was, as this court has already as has already been illuminated in oral argument, there was never any argument below that the consent given to Zabrine was involuntary. And I would also point out to the court that the issue in Arizona versus Johnson, the 2009 case, was not whether it had nothing to do with delays. The issue in Johnson was, can a law enforcement officer pat down a passenger during a traffic stop where... And so any discussion, any reliance on Johnson for the proposition that de minimis delays were not permissible is not supported by what the case actually stated. Unless the court has no other questions, I'd rely on my brief and ask that this court affirm the denial of the motion to suppress below and affirm the defendant's conviction. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Delphia. Ms. Downey, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to return briefly to the application of the exclusionary rule. Davis and Herring would both suggest that application of the exclusionary rule is not appropriate where it doesn't further the purpose of that, which is deter future violations of the law. But I don't think that that is the end of the inquiry. It doesn't just stop, you know, there's no application of the exclusionary rule. I think we have to consider whether or not in this context applying the exclusionary rule would deter future violations of law. And I think in this particular case, Officer Mosello was very candid when he testified about his training and experience. So he was told that it was okay. He had a grace period of up to 20 minutes. So that he was instructed specifically, and I want to say that this is on page 53 of the joint appendix, that he was supposed to call this canine first before actually engaging in the purpose for the stop. And I don't think that that has ever been the status of the law. The status of the law, rather, is that he is supposed to diligently pursue the purpose of the stop from the outset of the investigation. So to the extent that he has received training and experience and other officers are being instructed in this way, that it is, in theory, okay to exploit what he believed at the time to be this, 20-minute grace period, I think certainly an application of the exclusionary rule would deter future violations of the law where officers are put in this position where they have to decide, do I want to pursue my drug investigation function, or do I want to uphold this Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, which says that this motorist has the right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. And so he's given this...
Don't you think that Rodriguez probably does that in a much louder voice than anything that we say?
I think that the court, again, said it in Johnson and said it in Cabalas that, no, it's not okay to go off on this side deal if it's going to extend the stop. And I think that that was then interpreted as it's okay to extend the stop as long as it's just a little extension. So, yes, they've, stomped and screamed and shouted that, hey, there's no extension that is okay. But certainly that wasn't the status of the law at the time that this conduct was engaged in by Officer Mosello. So I see my time is up, and I would ask that for these reasons the court reverse and vacate Mr. Matthews' convictions.
Thank you, Sonny.
Thank you.
Come down and greet counsel.